Dr. Michael Hannawalt will be with us in the second hour talking about Tallahassee Community Chorus, their upcoming concert. Gerald Ensley will be with us in the first hour from a broadcast back in 2016, then talking about the 60th anniversary of the Tallahassee bus boycott. Stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widden Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax, and it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widden started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom-cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widden Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widden because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widden Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widden wanted, and it's been the Widden way of doing business for over 70 years. Widden Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widden Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or WiddenGlass.com.
Once again, it is time for the best part of your week. Just nod and smile politely. Come on. You know how much you just absolutely love this show, right? It's like if nothing else goes well in your day or in your week, you got me. You know, I mean, I'm here for you. And in that respect, I think it's fair to say that you have been faithful in your constancy, listening faithfully and carefully to all that we bring to this exciting 2 hours called Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. It is available to you all the time, but especially on Saturday mornings. We're on at 9 o'clock on Moose Magnificat. If you're an earlier riser, you can catch us on 93.3 FM, Real Talk in Tallahassee. All of those good folks over there, Greg Tisch and all the gang, Matty Rowe, yeah. Some of Tallahassee's finest right there for you, my friend. And we are in the good company this week, speaking of fine people. We're expecting to have some great conversations up ahead, and more about that in a moment. I want to talk with you especially about our Tallahassee Food Challenge. It is ongoing, and we're right kind of midstream at this point. Recall, if you will, that we begin usually around the first part of March, and it runs March, April, May, and a little bit into June, particularly because of this time of year, and I'll bring you up to date on that as well here in just a moment. And for your benefit, I have decided to bring to the show today the conversation we had now, goodness, 6 years ago when our dear friend Gerald Ensley was with us, and so many of you recognized then his contributions over the years that he served this community. A good friend of Tallahassee and of able journalist, really got his beginnings in sports. He told me, he said, you know, that's why I still get to vote in the polls, the AP poll, because he had press credentials. That's cool. Not sure he always voted in favor of the home team, but Gerald was a pretty straight kind of shooter. He was given to a lot of the things that are more often now are of great concern, greater concern. When we look around town and we talk about what's up ahead for us as a community, and that's a healthy question, isn't it? Where are we going? And you'll hear me preach at you too often, I suppose, about us discovering better who we really are. Identity, character or value, self-worth, and then purpose, you know, why? Who we are, what we're worth, and why we are here. What's our contributions, we'll say, to the world? What is our role in this ever-expanding, if not culturally, then perhaps economically or politically? I like what Tom Flanagan said about politics. He said, you know, we've turned the business of politics into a blood sport, haven't we? So it's just another avenue of entertainment for us, your side, my side, and we just want to see those folks enter the ring and beat the crap out of each other, and we can scream at the screen that we happen to be viewing at the moment, whatever that may be. You know, take it up on Facebook. Yeah, there's an intelligent choice. It's crazy. It begs the question, oh, is there not anything else we could do with our time that would be more productive? If not self encouraging, you know, just come on, folks, we can do better than this. That's my opinion. Now you got it. I also think that Gerald Ensley had a lot of strong opinions about things like race relations, and so it happens that on this broadcast today, we'll have this conversation from back in 2016, then recognizing the 60th anniversary of the Tallahassee bus boycott. Yeah. And in that respect, haven't we witnessed a greater awareness, a greater participation in that conversation, that discussion? Have we not made some progress? Well, I think so. I think we have. It's certainly when it comes to an open dialogue. We had Nasheed with us last week, Majune, Dr. Nasheed Majune. He heads up Florida Humanities. And he was talking then about the critical nature, the importance of storytelling and the humanities at large, music and art, performing arts, visual arts, literature, even language, the significance of language. These are the, you might say, embodiments of culture. And in his work, Gerald Ensley certainly contributed to our understanding and contributed to that ongoing dialogue. So he'll talk at length with us here in the first hour, recognizing the 60th anniversary of Tallahassee bus boycott. A few announcements for you as well. COCA is inviting you to be aware of their contributions. COCA has a number of events, speaking of culture, art, dance, film, history, the heritage of our community, of course, music and theater, literature, and all kinds of workshops and classes. So check them out. COCA is online, COCA. Just search COCA Tallahassee. Tallahassee Leon County Arts Guide is particularly the title there. Leon County also offering you the opportunity to make application if you want to join a citizen advisory committee dealing with everything from affordable housing to quality of growth, career source, capital region board. All of these are available if you go to leoncountyfl.gov/committees. The library's got a whole lot going on, too. Boy, I'll tell you, Leon County must have bought a new printer. We got a slew of these things. All right, well, I'll do the best I can. The Library of Things is a collection of items other than books that can be borrowed from the Leon County Public Library using your library card. Ooh, this includes, catch this, pressure washers, gardening tools, outdoor games, lawn darts, household tools, and a lot more. You can find out what they have over there for you. LeonCountyLibrary.org/things. Like a walk in the park. Sorry. Leon County News and Events also wanting us to know about dropping off old scrap tires. And it's for free through the end of April. Help prevent breeding grounds for mosquitoes. Yeah, don't we love them? Also, fertilizer rain delay continues in April, reminding homeowners and professional fertilizer applications do not apply fertilizer for at least another day ahead of forecasted heavy rain. Leon County special social media pages are there to remind us to refrain from fertilizing whenever there is a heavy rain in the forecast. Kind of keep that from ending up in groundwater. That's what I have for you here at the moment, my friends. I've got a little bit more coming up, and then we'll talk to Gerald Ensley. Stay with me.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Hi, I'm Melissa Bruner, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Reminding you that in case you hadn't noticed, school year is fast coming to an end. Here we are, middle of April. Happy Easter, by the way. It is Easter weekend. And a celebration of life among Christians around the world, this recognizing the resurrection of Jesus and the promise that that represents. So it's the next point in the story. You know, when you look at the birth of Christ, the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ, and then this ongoing invitation, we'd say. You know, he opens his hands, his arms, his heart, and as God in the flesh, so it is held among Christians. He is saying, come unto me, all of you who are burdened and heavy laden. Yeah, okay, everybody's hand just went up. If you're not heavy laden and burdened in this world at this point, I'd love to know what else you got going on. But for those of us who have decided, you know what, this is just more weight than I want to carry, the admonition here is, well, you're not meant to carry it. Why don't you walk with me for a while? Why don't you embrace the life that is in Christ? And in doing so, Easter then becomes more than, you know, colorful eggs and Easter bunnies and such. It's really an invitation to walk in freedom. Freedom from what? Well, freedom from self-condemnation, for one thing. We all have a heavy dose of that all the time. Or fear of the future. Fear of, all kinds of stuff. Diseases and hostile people in the world. That was another admonition he offered. He said, you know, you live in a troubled world, folks. Let me just tell you. Like, we didn't know this. But he says, because the world is in tribulation, he said, be of good cheer. I got good news for you. I've overcome that world, which is all about quid pro quo. You did a good thing, you get rewarded. You did a bad thing, you get punished. See, that's not God's economy. It's not the way Jesus explained it. And there's plenty of room for you if you want to go and check that out. If I'm lying to you, you can tell me. But it's all written down in that book and the many ways that God loves us unconditionally. And so it is, as I segue into my comments about the food challenge, that we extend that love, that grace, that mercy unconditionally. There is no other shoe to drop. There is no pro for the quid. I mean, if you're hungry, you're hungry. And if you're living in poverty that you just cannot get out of somehow, and there's a lot of it, folks, come on. Leon County leads the state among the top most impoverished, income entrenched in the state of Florida. Estimates are 27, 28, maybe 30% of Leon County living at or below the poverty level. So food is the first victim, the availability of good food. And so what we do then is encourage us all to give generously. And our slogan is simple: take the challenge, fill a bowl, and feed the hungry. We've launched this campaign now these many 20 years ago, because we started in 2002. Wow, 20 years we've been encouraging us all to do just that, to take that challenge. And we continue to look for ways to get our message out: radio and TV, billboards, our web search media, social media. It's all a part of this effort. We have our official website, Tallahassee Food Challenge, that you can easily visit, with the opportunity to donate directly to Second Harvest of the Big Bend. There's a big old donate button right there. And while you're there, make sure that you take notice of some of these businesses that have contributed, some of them from our beginning. Truck and Car Concept started with us back in that first effort 20 years ago, still going strong. Great company, great people over there. If you need something for your car, you know, like dressing it up a little bit, and by golly, wouldn't this be a great time since car prices are absurd? Yeah, forget about it. That's why they want to buy your used car. Have you noticed that? Yeah. Well, I mean, whatever. But if you're like me, man, I just made my last car payment. Yay. So if I want to do something, I'll get some, I don't know, vent visors, or, I don't know, maybe some chrome somewhere. Put a lift kit on. Well, I guess a Sebring with a lift kit would look sort of weird. That's not going to work. Well, you might put a hitch on your truck. There you go. You know, take your family out there camping or something. Put a boat on the back of your truck or a trailer. Anyway, Truck and Car Concepts, the place to go. They're over there on Mahan Drive. Sellers Tile, another great company. Sellers in Tallahassee, Tommy Tharp and his team. All kinds of flooring stuff. Wood, carpet, tile. Yeah, Sellers. They're on Capital Circle, just north of Mahan Drive. And, of course, Wood and Glass. I mean, the real glass people for Tallahassee, Tallahassee's first family in glass. We celebrate that a lot because they have given so much to this community in their now 76 years, 77 years, started in 1945. Wow. Pretty cool stuff, man. Wood and Glass on South Monroe is one of our sponsors, and our presenting sponsor, Gain Street Pies. Again, I mean, I think this is their third, maybe fourth year running. They love to give back to this town. Jeremy Matlow and his company over there with three locations: Gain Street Pies East, Midtown, and up there, and of course down there on Gain Street. Thus the name, Gain Street Pies. Okay, yeah. And let's not forget Wayne Fryer. Wayne Fryer Mobile Homes over there on the Blue Star Highway, west side of town. Great organization. Again, these are people that do it all. I mean, if you're looking for mobile home and you're not sure what you need or what you want, well, they got plenty of models there on the premises. They'll help you acquire land. They'll help you with your financing. It's a complete package. You know, they even have like these portable carports and stuff and sheds. They got it all going on there. Wayne Fryer Homes, Tallahassee, over there on the west side of town, the Blue Star Highway, it's called. Folks, it's called the Tallahassee Food Challenge. I want you to keep it in mind, and please thank our sponsors. Share the opportunity with a friend. You know, take the link, put it in an email and say, hey, have you done this? Challenge one another. Take the challenge, fill a bowl, and feed the hungry. You'll be doing your part. And the more we can do now with schools, you know, school year coming to a close, it means that the food charities, all of whom depend upon Second Harvest, well, they'll have the foodstuffs that they need. And we will have done our part by making sure that we continue our donations in the proper manner. So we don't need any food shortages. We need more dollars, more food, and more compassion for our neighbors. That's kind of how Tallahassee rolls.
Every day, Sellers makes life a little better for homeowners, helping them find the best design ideas for their homes with the best quality tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Even mosaics and ceramic and vinyl solutions are right there at their fingertips. Professional designers and seasoned advisors are ready with expert guidance to be certain they find the best solutions for their home. And best of all, Sellers works hard to bring the lowest prices and the highest quality products all in one location. That saves homeowners time and money. Maybe it's time for you to find the Sellers advantage for your home or your office. See for yourself this week at Sellers' spacious showroom, conveniently located on Capitol Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive. Or find them online at sellerstile.com. Style, quality, and design at Sellers in Tallahassee. 656-8453.
More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back. We are privileged to have with us Gerald Inslee, who, for his contributions to our understanding and even our education, sometimes our amusement, has been famous for his work with the Tallahassee Democrat over these many years. But let's welcome Gerald Inslee to the show. How are you, sir?
Doing fine, Brian. I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk.
You're looking good.
Thank you.
Your work with the newspaper and for those many years that you were involved really began, if I'm not mistaken, as a sports reporter in the Carolinas?
I started here as a sports writer with the Tallahassee Democrat. I was a sports writer for the first eight-plus years, although I continued to write a sports column for another five or six, even after I went to the news side.
Yeah.
But I started as a sports writer.
And then, you were even a part of the student publication,
yes,
too.
Yes, I was a sports editor of the Florida Flambeau, the independent newspaper at FSU.
Look at that. Yeah. So you've watched this town unfold and grow and discover itself. So right, there's this kind of awakening going on.
There's certainly an awakening going on.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe this is a segue into what we're going to talk about. But I say all the time that the biggest change from when I came in 1969 to today is the improvement in race relations. And all that started 13 years before I came with the Tallahassee bus boycott in 1956.
In fact.
But this was a very old South town. And you talk about the awakening and the changes, and there's many of those. Many of them have nothing to do with race. But it is the growth and the improvement of race relations that has been the most significant advance in this town.
And in fact, this bus boycott that we're talking about, this is the 60th anniversary celebration of the 1956 bus boycott.
Right.
And that happened because we had these two FAMU students. Let's see if I can get these names correctly. You say them.
Kerry Patterson.
Yeah.
And Wilhelmina Jakes.
Wilhelmina Jakes. There we go.
They were two FAMU students.
Yeah.
In fact, they lived together in a rooming house over on Jennings Street, very near the AMU campus.
Yeah.
And on May 26, 1956, the two of them went to board the bus at what is now FAMU Way and Adams Street. And they immediately sat down on a bench seat right behind the driver where a white woman was also sitting. The driver immediately said, "You have to move." They said they weren't. He said, "You have to move." They said, "Well, give us our dimes back." He refused to give them their dimes back. I mean, it was a dime fare in those days. Apparently, having put it in the machine or whatever they had in those days, he felt he could not return those dimes. So when they refused to move without their dimes, he drove them to the police station and had them arrested. He called the police and had them arrested. And that that kicked off the boycott. I mean, many things followed. The next night, a fiery cross was burned in the yard of the home where the two girls were staying. Mm. That was on a Sunday night. Then on Monday morning, an infuriated student body led by student government president Brodus Hartley, they called a meeting at Lee Hall. At those days, FAMU had only something like 2,200 students. Mm. But anyway, most of the 2,200 students arrived at Lee Hall, and Hartley called for a boycott of the buses, thinking that that would be a good protest back. I don't know. I don't think he was thinking of the historical context, which was that, you know, it already happened in Baton Rouge and happened in Montgomery.
Right, right.
But maybe it was. But mainly he was reacting to the agency, if you will, that had denied two FAMU students their human rights.
Right. Do you think there was for them a bit of inspiration?
Possibly.
Okay.
I've got to say, I mean, I don't know how much of the story you want me to tell, but
as you can.
Okay. Well, the students started the boycott. And that was on a Monday in late May. There was only 1 week left in the term, in a time when students went away at summer. Nowadays, you know, you've got to take at least one or two summer semesters to graduate. And so the town doesn't empty out like it did in the old days. The old days, colleges closed, they were empty. Yeah. Okay, so in this case, the students are there for 1 week, and presumably they didn't ride the bus much for that 1 week. But then they were gone. So the boycott would have died had it been left up to the students, not because they wanted to, but because they just weren't there. They were gone.
Yeah.
What happened was on that Tuesday after the Monday decision by students was that a group of black pastors and businessmen gathered and formed the Inter-Civic Council. And it was this group.
And that was Reverend Steele.
That was he was elected president. But it was that group led by Reverend Steele that really maintained, propelled, and made the boycott happen. And
do you think they, as a group, recognized the historic significance of what they were doing?
I think they possibly recognized the historic significance. To me, the bigger thing is the courage it took. These were middle-aged, middle-class people, dependent on the kindness of white people. Most of them, Steele and the businessmen, that's why they were able to form this, because they weren't dependent on white people. You had grocer Dan Speed, whose clientele was mostly black. You had the black preachers who were paid mostly by their pastors.
Yeah.
So the leaders of the thing were probably thinking of the historic part. The ones that joined them, the maids and laborers who came to support them, who came to drive cars to take people to work, these people had to have a certain amount of courage, because what they were doing was attacking their employers. Yeah. I mean, not specifically, but they ran the risk of being fired and losing their jobs. Yeah. The pastors didn't necessarily, but those who participated in the boycott ran the risk of infuriating the white people for whom they depended on for their economy. Yeah. So I think later on, the Tallahassee Civil Rights Movement will be guided by students, mostly FAMU students, Patricia Stevens Dew, and all those. But students faced no real consequences for their lives, other than being arrested or being beaten or something like that. For these middle-aged people, they were risking their entire families and their economies to take this first step, because Tallahassee has not had that first step.
Interestingly, too, you bring this out in the article that the import of their action was especially pointed because the vast majority of those who rode the bus
were black. Right.
And so for this black community to say, we're out.
Right.
That meant that this private company, which in those days it was,
right? City Strange, it was private at that time, right.
They just lost the majority of their customer base.
Sure. And it indeed was the bus company that was willing to capitulate sooner than the city commission was. The bus company the bus company agreed to one of the three demands of the protesters, which was to hire black drivers. They did that fairly soon in the process. And the bus company was willing to let them ride anywhere they wanted, except the city commission wouldn't. The city commission passed an ordinance for a while, and it was called assigned seating. And that was, the bus driver was supposed to assign the passengers to a seat based on weight and height. I mean, like somehow four 200-pound people on one side of the bus was going way down or something like that. So it was the city commission that fought it harder than city transits because, as you note, it was an economic thing. They couldn't afford to keep losing money. They were willing to revisit, if you will, the idea of who sat where and who drove the buses. So, it was an economic thing for them. But for the city commission, this was the first salvo in, we're going to change the way things have been. And that's what they feared. They feared that the city commission felt, if we give in on this, how much longer before they want to go to the same schools? How much longer before they start marrying our women?
So in that way, it was a seminal event.
Yes.
Folks, we're talking with Gerald Ensley. We are in recognition of the 60th anniversary of the Tallahassee bus boycott. And you are in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Stay with me.
After the Sabbath, at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb, and there was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord rolled back the stone and said unto the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus, who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen." This Easter, may your heart be filled with the faith and wonder of that first Easter morning, now and throughout the year. A message of hope from Wood and Glass on South Monroe, Tallahassee's first family in glass, for mirrors, shower enclosures, tabletops, and window glass. Call 222-5781. And Seller's Tile on Capitol Circle Northeast for the best design ideas and quality tile, carpet, hardwood flooring, mosaics, ceramic, and vinyl solutions for your home or office. Call 656-8453 or online at sellerstile.com.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
In 1956, the Tallahassee bus boycott drew a line in the sand when it came to race relations and civil rights, especially as it was focused on the use of what was then a privately owned bus company. Gerald Ensley is with us, and Gerald, we've talked a little bit about some of the particulars, some of the history as to how this came about. When you look forward, and you said this in your opening remarks with us, the number of years that have passed, even since your arrival in Tallahassee, you said that the changes we've made in race relations are probably the most significant in our time. And we're going to have Kenneth Pratt with us in the second hour to talk even more in more greater detail then about where we are now. We've made progress.
Because your question was, will it go away? And apparently it won't go away with a certain segment of the economy,
and
for
so
one
then,
thing.
And so then what is required of us who are not of that mind? How do we better, if we can't eliminate it, how do we control
I hope
it?
I hope it's by the continued good example of good people doing the right things that make it harder and harder for bad people to do the wrong things, and that even if it's in their head, they have less and less opportunity to do anything about it. And you've got to give some credit to the passage of time. There are people now who are in the good segment. Let's say 80% of the white population is in the good segment. I would say 50 years ago, maybe only 20%.
Well, and to your point, when we look around the country and look at the vast number of communities, including our own, we don't see daily or even on a consistent basis of some kind shootings of young black men.
Right.
It's happened in a few communities.
Right.
So it almost underscores your point there that you're going to have these elements of racism showing up.
Right.
And when we look at that, what went on in Charlotte was, to me, a sort of mix of violence that often you would just associate with rioting. And then you had those who seemed to be a lot more concerned about the protest and making their point that beyond the reactionary aspects, we've got a much larger issue at stake.
Right.
Is that a fair assessment, you think? I mean,
are you saying that that most of the population wants peace and goodness on earth?
I think so.
I think I am saying that. So.
And I'm saying
it's the reason why I hope Hillary is going to be elected.
Well, and I think that the people who, you mentioned the 15 young black men who were put up there and said these are black teenagers, does it help their cause, whether it's Black Lives Matter or our cause, to say, can't we all get along?
Right.
When we have people who are looting and rioting and burning and such, that seems to me to reinforce all of that. See people going, aha, see, there you go.
Yeah,
and I think it overshadows then what is really the fact.
Right.
And
that is that we've got I don't think that any thinking person condones the looting and rioting. They may understand it as an expression of anger, but it's mostly an expression of anger.
But it becomes fuel for this, we'll call it minority position.
Yes. Yes.
That says, that's why we can't trust black people.
Exactly. Okay. It is.
Yeah. Okay.
But there is also there's an inherent distrust that I don't, you know, that's the thing that we got to keep eating away at. In elementary school, if a white kid cuts the fool, acts up, tells jokes, teacher thinks he's a high-spirited, he's a nice kid. A black kid does the same thing. He goes to the principal's office. Mm-hmm. There is still a fear among certain people that black people are somehow more dangerous than white people. Mm-hmm. That's some sort of human reaction that I'm not sure what motivates that. You know, people always say, oh, we all want to be better than somebody. I don't know that I've ever woke up one morning and said, boy, I hope I'm better than so-and-so. Mm-hmm. But perhaps there is, mm-hmm. you know. And so there's still a segment of people that look at black people differently. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing you hope you overcome by good examples, by intolerance of misbehavior.
And in the case of the Tallahassee bus boycott, mm-hmm. which we are then acknowledging right. and recognizing,
right.
it sometimes comes about because collectively, blacks and whites and Asians
right.
and Hispanics, we all come together and say, this is the way we want to live.
I think many white people in 1956 came to realize, why are we arguing about where they sit on the bus? You know, I mean, they realize that this is not, I mean, that while they may not have accepted blacks as equal, while they may not have voted for them for the city commission, they could not justify being too hardcore about the idea of giving them
right.
the human dignity right. of sitting wherever they want on the bus.
Well, and interestingly, you mentioned that the next day, here were these burning crosses.
Right.
in the front yards of.
But that's been.
But think about what that impact yeah. would have had with white people
right.
who say, well, that's not me.
Malcolm Johnson, the legendary editor of the Tallahassee Democrat, often accused of not being a heavy promoter of integration, and he wasn't. But he immediately seized on that, said, this is not the way we want to behave as a community. Yeah. You may disagree with the bus boycott, or you may disagree with these two girls, because
right,
it happened that
right,
quick.
Right.
You may disagree with these two girls choosing not to move, but we don't want to be a place where we can
right.
encourage violence.
Incredulous as it may seem, and as much as the Klan has not had the kind of visibility that it had at one
yeah.
time, I'm sure that it's still alive and well.
That's part of the positive
yeah.
slow movement I was talking about.
Yeah.
You know, talking about as whites came to realize that the bus boycott or that the riding on the buses isn't something we should be enforcing strict segregation on. From 1963 to 1968, Tallahassee, and I may be off on one of the years, but for three, four, five summers, Tallahassee pools were closed down each summer rather than allow black kids to swim in the same pools with white kids. We had three public pools. One of them was in the black section. The other two, Levy Park and Myers Park, were for whites only. But protesters led by Patricia Stevens Dew, who I mentioned, would bring black kids to the city pools and try to swim. That was stopped. So by the next year, they just closed pools. They just did not open the pools at all in the summer. And eventually, white people said, now, wait a second, what? You know, maybe we're not going to consider them our equals. Maybe we're not going to elect them to office. But what can be wrong with their swimming in a pool, especially as hot as it is? Everybody instinctively knew Tallahassee's hot in the summer. How can you deny kids the right to swim in a pool? And again, Malcolm Johnson sort of led the way on that. He said, this is enough. This is stupid. I mean, the city commission had voted three, four times to close the pool. And he just started chiding them and saying, this is ridiculous. This is not where we make our stand about race.
Yeah. And that stand is...
And so progressively...
Onward.
Every decision
yeah.
that happens like that makes a new generation not use those sort of tactics and not feel that way.
Yeah.
You know, you'd be shy. Nobody thinks twice about jumping into a pool that's already got black kids in it.
There are a lot of those things that are archaic.
Right.
And when
they become archaic.
Yeah, yes. Brought to our attention now, especially among those who didn't live through that time,
right.
They're astounded. It's just like another planet.
Right.
You can
right.
see it. Folks, so unfortunately, we don't get to have more time with this dear man. Gerald Inslee, our guest this morning, as we recognize this 60th anniversary of the Tallahassee bus boycott back in 1956. I was a year old, by the way.
I was four.
So for those of you who may be a bit older than Gerald and I, you may were witness to all of this. God bless you. And thank you for being a part of this broadcast today. Look forward to having Gerald back on another occasion. Thank you, sir, for being with us.
Thank you, Brian.
Folks, stay with me. I've got more coming up after the top of the hour. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
My dog was in bad shape, and I was scared. I had never seen her so sick, and my mind was racing. What to do? Who to call? I mean, I raised her from a puppy. She's like my best friend. A few years ago, she developed diabetes, and I've been following her daily regimen carefully. But that morning, something just wasn't right. She could barely move, and I thought, I'm losing my dog. I called a friend, and he said, call Dr. Pliskin. So I called Mahan Animal Clinic. They put me through immediately, and Dr. Pliskin said to get her there right away. Turns out, her blood sugar had dropped dramatically, but he knew exactly what to do. I guess you know. There's no other place I would go knowing that Mahan Animal Clinic and Dr. Pliskin are there for me and Aerith.
Special people and special care for those you love. Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive near Costco. On the web at mahananimalclinic.com or call 402-0557.
Hi, I'm Tom Flanagan. You're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back to the second hour, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Online for you all the times at TallahasseeTalks.com, and you'll find all kinds of goodies there for you. The archive, especially if you'd like to return to a broadcast from earlier days, we can do so conveniently enough. Easiest way to do that is just search for, you know, person's name or a topic, and should be right there for you. Always, those are permanent links. We just keep it available for posterity, so to speak. Or you can subscribe to the podcast. You can do it that way. As a broadcast, you know this, we broadcast on Moose Magnificat at 9 o'clock Saturday morning. Prior to that, if you're up early with the folks over there at Real Talk, well, you can tune in at 7 a.m., you know, because you're one of those movers and shakers kind of thing, or at least you're moving at 7 o'clock Saturday morning. I'm not sure how much shaking you're doing unless you just had one of those nights. Never mind. So, and then there's the broadcast Sunday afternoon at 3 and Wednesday afternoon at 5:30. So those are all for your convenience. The Saturday morning at 9 on Moose, Sunday afternoon at 3 on Moose, and again on Wednesday afternoon 5:30 on Moose Magnificat Radio, Tallahassee's only streaming radio to the world that brings all local musicians playing their original songs. Yeah, beautiful. People that, for example, like Drew Tillman, who was with us this last week, and Sarah Mack, now retired, and Grant Peoples, and Tallahassee Nights Live. I mean, all of these remarkable musicians, songwriters, performers that really characterize the sound of Tallahassee, and that's what Moose is devoted to bringing you. Along with shows like this one and Danny on Everything with Danny Bedrosian. Wow, he's a cool guy. Yeah, put him on your friends list, you know, kind of thing. And then occasionally we'll have a live broadcast recurring on Saturday nights at 9. We have live from the BBC, Bradfordville Blues Club, Gary, Anton, Kim out there. Keeping the torches lit, man. They are... I mean, I think that Gary and Kim are among those most stalwart individuals in our community who dedicated to the notion that the history, the contribution that is blues music in general, and then what that means here in Tallahassee, jazz and blues are woven into the fabric of our history and current day. I mean, celebrating this remarkable contribution to the Southeast, especially the Bradfordville Blues Club, was part of that whole circuit when blues artists were looking for places to, you know, hang. The word is that they'd play down there at Frenchtown, and you know, the local bars and such venues would close up at 2 o'clock, and so then they'd all go hang out at the Bradfordville Blues Club, then known as it was even before Dave CC Club, but you get the point. So there you go. That's on Saturday nights with us on Moose, 9 o'clock. Live broadcast of Bradfordville Blues Club. Then you have those special events. We're working on this. If we are able to do this for you, we will. Still in the process of working out some of the details, but we have this opportunity to broadcast from Lemoyne Chain of Parks Art Festival that Friday night of the festival with none other than Tallahassee Nights Live performing from 5:30 to 7:30. We hope to be able to bring that to you so that if you're living up there in, you know, Albany, Georgia or Gainesville, Georgia, shout out to Stefan and Kaylee up there, or parts unknown. I mean, if you're in Albuquerque, you can listen to the Moose because it's online, moosemagnificat.com, 24/7, 365. It's what we love to do. Speaking of loving to do things, we love to celebrate not only what is Tallahassee, but what Tallahassee receives from all of those contributors to this community. Michael Hannawalt is certainly one of those people. Student here at Florida State, worked on his doctorate under the tutelage of then, prior to his retirement, then Dr. Andre Thomas. So we're going to talk with Dr. Hannawalt now about his role with the Tallahassee Community Chorus. I think the title is Artistic Director, if I'm not mistaken. We'll find out about that. He's with me here in the second hour. We got a show coming up entitled I Shall Give Peace. That's on the 24th, 4 o'clock, Ruby Diamond. You can still buy tickets if you go online. Go to their website, tcchorus.org. And that's a very important thing to do. The chorus is like so many performing arts organizations in recovery. They're on the rebound from the last couple of years of nonsense. And so here we are trying to get the word out that they are back better than ever, sporting some remarkable talent and some amazing contributions here musically. This concert will prove to be a timely collection of powerful, beautiful choral music with their orchestra performing, and a call for peace. And certainly at Easter time, when we're looking for that to happen globally, we celebrate Easter with the notion that Jesus said unto his disciples, and notice I use the, you know, the official King James pronunciation there. He said unto them, I would simply say, Jesus told them this. This is a troubled world, guys, and it's going to be this way, ladies. Peoples, you're going to find yourself faced with unfathomable tragedy. People that choose to do opposite of what is the best for all concerned, or for themselves, for that matter. You know, and it's the human condition.
we would say. He said, well, I want to encourage you because I have overcome that troubled world, the world of tribulation. How is that possible? How can that be true, I guess, when we look around us and say, well, I don't know, whatever kind of overcoming you're talking about. So as it's revealed then, and over time, those of us who have made it a life's endeavor to figure out what that means, that peace comes by way of a personal response to what is already a standing invitation. You know, because people want to know, have you found Jesus? And of course, my response is, I didn't know he was lost. The truth of the matter is, he found us. He came for us. And that's what Easter really celebrates. It's the idea that God, in his love for all of us, for all of humanity, said, I want you and I to be one, and I am going to initiate that, and I will back that up with my own life.
On the first day of the week, at early dawn, they came to the tomb and found the stone rolled away from the entrance. But when they entered, they did not find the body of Jesus. And it happened that two men suddenly stood near them in dazzling apparel and said to them, Why do you seek the living one among the dead? He is not here. He has risen. This Easter, may your heart be filled with the wonder of that first Easter morning. A message of joy from Seller's Tile on Capitol Circle Northeast for the best design ideas and quality tile, carpet, hardwood flooring, mosaics, ceramic and vinyl solutions for your home or office. Call 656-8453 or online at sellerstile.com. And Witten Glass on South Monroe, Tallahassee's first family in glass for mirrors, shower enclosures, tabletops, and window glass. Call 222-5781.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
Michael Hanawalt is a student of music and history, American culture, the world's culture. He is Tallahassee trained, Florida State University, got his doctorate there. The artistic director, is that the proper title, for Tallahassee Community Chorus. If you're a listener of any length, you know that it's one of our faves, TC Chorus, and it is our pleasure to welcome the artistic director for Tallahassee Community Chorus, Dr. Michael Hanawalt.
It's great to be back. Thanks so much for having me.
See how muted he is about that? He's just very humble. And I try to, you know, kind of puff him up a little bit and give him all this fanfare. And he's just, it's not necessary. Let's just talk about this upcoming concert. I know that that's the real thing for you, as it is, as it should be.
Sure.
This being, among other things, this is the closing, the final concert for this 21-22 season, marked with, some disappointment. We didn't get to do the biggie back there, the Unity concert. I guess that was in January.
Yep.
Got nixed. But here we are. And with this concert coming up the 24th, Ruby Diamond, 4 o'clock, very standard. We have Rafe Vaughn Williams music. Tell us about the concert you've entitled, I Shall Give Peace.
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, we did have one Unity concert that was canceled this year, but it has been such a privilege to be back making music. We're able to do Haydn Creation in the fall, and now this concert coming up next week, I Shall Give Peace. And so we're really grateful for those opportunities to be back and singing in person this year. It's meant a lot to us as a choir
and
a community of people. So this program was conceived, last year when we were talking about this season. And conceptually, my idea was that we as a society have gone through so much over the last number of years with the pandemic and politics and all this kind of things. And all of those things have, in my mind, have been vehicles for people to become increasingly frustrated and isolated and angry and
unpeaceful.
And unpeaceful, So when I conceived of this program, the idea was to look at the idea of peace from a number of different angles. And the Vaughan Williams speaks about kind of militaristic peace and, you know, that.
The cessation of conflict.
Exactly, the absence of war. And then the Randall Stroop piece expands that kind of definition of peace and kind of looks at it from multiple angles. And the idea was that hopefully this could give people some food for thought in terms of how we can communicate with each other again, how we can try to live lives that are meaningfully engaging, you know, with each other in ways that are not dismissive and conflict ridden and all those kinds of things. Yeah. Of course, with the advent of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, it's also taken on another layer of meaning. And we've been doing these rehearsals, hearing the news sometimes earlier in the day of, you know, things that have been going on there. And so it's really taken on a secondary meaning that is just as powerful, you know, in terms of just not personally, but feeling the impact of that and the sorrow for the Ukrainian people and all that kind of
thing.
Well,
I don't believe you. I think that you walked into those rehearsals with a great deal of personal angst over the news o'day. And if you'll forgive me, I think I know you well enough as one of your disciples, somebody who sang in the chorus under your leadership, and having had this opportunity with you a number of times, you feel things much more deeply than what you're confessing at the moment. And so what I think is that is contributive.
Of
course you agree, but I think that in that capacity, you are that ambassador or representative or convoy. You're the person who brings to us as singers why. Why is it important that we do this? There's a lot of people who could stand up there and flap their arms and try to get us to sing off of a sheet of music. But when you're the artistic director for this chorus, it seems to me you're tasked with instilling a sense of responsibility and a sort of answering to the question of the day. You bring to us that vision, that energy. So now we do get a better grasp of, why am I doing this? Right?
Absolutely. And, you know, no one makes music in a vacuum, you know. We all are making music in the context of the world in which we live. And so it's, you know, I think it's incumbent upon teachers and educators and conductors and people who are bringing music to life or charged with doing that to build an understanding amongst the ensembles of, you know, other avenues through which they can experience
this.
That this is not just music for music's sake, but that it's music that challenges people to think and feel in ways that react to the world at large.
Absolutely. I'll offer another thought that I know you address professionally, that music cannot be music if it is not in some manner conveying and communicating with us, to us, for us. The stuff that you celebrate, the masters from centuries gone by, they all had some direction, some motivating, driving perspective, whether it was sacred, whether it was contemporary, whether it was ancient, you know, comment of the day. They all came to their craft with that endeavor, right?
Yeah, and I think
you're no less.
No, and certainly there was an initial spark or idea that brought these pieces to life based on some kind of experience in many cases. And so our challenge, you know, as conductors of this music in a modern context is to tap into maybe what that initial feeling was, understand what that initial feeling is, and then transfer that to the whatever might be going on in the modern day and how it could be relevant to people's lives now.
Yeah, and I'll admonish you even further that I think you are the able person in the room among a very noteworthy group of able people to bring that to us. You know, it's your job to dig in. It's your love
to peel back those layers and say, you know, what was the driving thought here? And then how do I express that musically?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we're the, you know, and the conductors of the vehicle through that. And a lot of the things that we say, even if it's not telling people how they should think, we never want to do that. But we hopefully can give people keys throughout the rehearsal to kind of unlock doors and experience their truth for themselves.
I think it's telling us how you think.
Yeah.
I think it's telling us as an audience how these artists approach this same topic.
Yep.
I don't know art, but I know what I like. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Of course, you know art because you know what you like. That's kind of the whole point. And if I'm sitting there and listening to this chorus and it's in its magnificence, okay, you guys are, you're top shelf, and I'm not moved, well then I'm making a call to my cardiologist because there's something not right. Folks, I've got Michael Hanewalt with us. He is the artistic director for Tallahassee Community Chorus. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks. Stay with me.
Every day, Sellers makes life a little better for homeowners, helping them find the best design ideas for their homes with the best quality tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Even mosaics and ceramic and vinyl solutions are right there at their fingertips. Professional designers and seasoned advisors are ready with expert guidance to be certain they find the best solutions for their home. And best of all, Sellers works hard to bring the lowest prices and the highest quality products all in one location. That saves homeowners time and money. Maybe it's time for you to find the Sellers advantage for your home or your office. See for yourself this week at Sellers Spacious Showroom. Conveniently located on Capitol Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive. Or find them online at sellerstile.com. Style, quality, and design at Sellers in Tallahassee. 656-8453.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with Dr. Michael Hanewalt. Student from Florida State University and parts unknown, other all kinds of places. I mean, and he's all like, what are you, like 23 years old or something? Dear Lord. I think you're past 23 now.
But a little past, yeah.
You have, and you have two kids or?
Just yeah, one.
Just the one child.
Yep.
And I was fortunate enough to be a part of this Tallahassee Community Chorus. It really is a family. And as that patriarch, Dr. Thomas, then was at the helm, I have it on good authority that your style is quite different, or different in many ways, we'll say. Thomas being the sort of autocratic, rule by iron fist, you didn't mark your music, you don't know your score, and he would call you out, right? So he put the fear of music in you, or the fear of God, or the fear of Andre. Yours is the more engaging, more inviting sort of approach. Folks, this is, again, I'll go back to the why. Not just how, but why are we doing this? And I wonder where that comes from. Is that, Michael, that's your personality? Or is that mixed with, this is how I was taught?
Well, I would first of all say, you know, certainly Dr. Thomas did, you know, you didn't want one of those looks, you know, during rehearsal. He was famous for those eyes of his, you know.
Right.
At the same time, he is just one of the most delightful people you'll ever meet.
Indeed.
And just indeed, an amazing storyteller, and has a way of engaging choruses like that. Just has a meeting out of the palm of their hand, you know. It's just an amazing thing to see. And I think, you know, my feeling about conducting is that, yes, I have a lot of opinions about how I want the music to go and what I think is, you know, the right way to do things, interpretation-wise, and how the chorus needs to perform this. But I also feel like I am a vehicle to create that understanding as an educator, and I want them to fully engage and enjoy the process along the way, you know. And I do think times have changed somewhat in terms of what people respond to, you know. The old school, I think, picture of a conductor. You know, you see, and Dr. Thomas was in no way this, but you see, hear stories about some of these old guard conductors that would completely throw fits and throw things and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, I think times have changed. Students have changed. People have changed. Mm-hmm. They come to this because they want to be lifted up. They come to this because they need some emotional fuel at the end of a day. Whatever else fills their day professionally or personally, this is an opportunity where they can kind of let some of that other worry or trouble or whatever it might be, or just busyness, mm-hmm. wash away and escape for a little bit, you know? And so I do feel like I'm trying to create an environment in which people are able to relax somewhat, yes, yeah. And of course, yeah. fully engage in the process, but that they're able to feel affirmed and lifted up through that rehearsal.
Right. And, you know, I think you're right. I think there is among professional ranks in various professions, this notion of servant leadership, the person who has that helm they're charged with is more often the collaborative kind of person who is engaging people, pulling them into the process, as opposed to, you know, the dictator or the sort of autocratic dispenser of instructions, giving you orders. This is what you need to do. If you don't do it, you're out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is not, you know, the 1900s, for heaven's sakes, not even the 20th century. We have come to a place, I think, as a culture, this music, I think, appeals to me in that it is tying our current situation to ideas that occurred many, many years ago.
Right.
So it's a kind of, I guess you'd say, a kind of recalling of, we've been here before, folks. Let's look at where we are now. What do you hope will happen for those listening and being attending this concert?
Well, I hope, you know, first of all, with regards to the Vaughan Williams, you know, so Vaughan Williams himself was an ambulance driver during World War I, and so he witnessed firsthand just the atrocities of war and the wounds and all those kinds of things that the soldiers experienced. And so in reaction to that experience, he wrote this work, Dona Nobis Pacem, as a kind of warning in the buildup to World War II. So this was kind of a clarion call against going down this road again. You know, so it was a warning back in the day, and I think it can serve as that now as well, not just in terms of militaristic war, but that we as a society have to be careful, because if we get to the point where we are unable to talk to each other in a collegial fashion, if we're unwilling to or unable to discuss issues or engage with each other in a way that could promote common understanding, if everyone goes off to their little corners of the world and just screams and yells and pouts and stomps,
what are we left with?
What are we left with? You know, and I think that, to me, we're getting close to teetering on that edge, you know, and I think, as with many things, you know, if you think of the environment, there's at some point there's going to be a tipping there that, from which you're not going to come back from. And then I think societally there at some point may be a tipping, you know, from which we can't come back from. And I hope that this gives people pause to think about that and what that might mean for us as humans.
History unlearned is history that repeats itself.
Yeah.
It has been said in other ways. But the point you're making, I think, is pay attention, folks. Armed conflict is the ultimate, perhaps, then in terms of non-peace. But there's a whole lot of non-peace or unrest in our contemporary culture, in our daily conversations. And, you know, you raise a very interesting point, because for me it's always been about how World War II was in formation 100 years prior.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that the only way in which a person could rise to power representing the Nazis and their perspective was in the context of a culture
that said, we approve, we support this thinking.
Mm-hmm.
How else can you have a village of people less than a kilometer from a death camp,
right,
that know precisely what's going on? Or when those, on occasion, people escaped from those death camps, they were handed over to the Nazis by the local villagers. Well, so that's not something that just kind of sprung up over a few decades. That's a mindset that I think we, to your point, have to very carefully account for. And the day that I decide you don't have the right to speak what you think, keep your enemies closer. That's the mandate. Know what it is that I think. I know what you think. Better that we have that discourse, to your point,
yeah,
than to we simply run off to our corners.
Yeah.
Maybe this concert will help us.
Hopefully
it will. Folks, stay with me. Michael Hanewald is here. He is helping us navigate through a time of unrest, seeking peace.
My dog was in bad shape, and I was scared. I had never seen her so sick, and my mind was racing. What to do? Who to call? I mean, I raised her from a puppy. She's like my best friend. A few years ago, she developed diabetes, and I've been following her daily regimen carefully. But that morning, something just wasn't right. She could barely move, and I thought, I'm losing my dog. I called a friend, and he said, call Dr. Pliskin. So I called Mahan Animal Clinic. They put me through immediately, and Dr. Pliskin said to get her there right away. Turns out her blood sugar had dropped dramatically, but he knew exactly what to do. I guess you know. There's no other place I would go knowing that Mahan Animal Clinic and Dr. Pliskin are there for me and Aerith.
Special people and special care for those you love. Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive near Costco. On the web at mahananimalclinic.com or call 402-0557.
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio. And you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
What do you aspire to? What do you hope for? What when you look forward beyond this concert?
Well, I think one of the things that I like about this concert is it takes this Vaughan Williams piece, which is dealing with the idea of peace in a, you know, specifically from the perspective of a military conflict. Okay, but then we pair it with this lovely just little sorbet of a piece by Elaine Hagenberg, which just kind of sets the scene, kind of almost an opening benediction, if you will, in some ways, to kind of wish for peace for people and that everyone finds a deep peace for themselves. But then this Randall Stroop piece that challenges us to think about peace in a broader context. So one of the movements of the Stroop piece has a text which deals with mental stability and feeling of every in person's inner turmoil and own mental health, finding peace within oneself. Another is a famous text by Wendell Berry, The Peace of Wild Things.
Oh, yes.
And that is about finding peace with nature and enjoying, you know, the kind of natural world in which we live in and deriving a sense of calm from that. And so he takes a number of these ideas like that and branches the idea of peace out. And so, you know, if you ask about the future, I think, you know, I hope to keep doing things that will challenge people to think or experience things in a way that opens doors for them intellectually or philosophically, that challenges them to look at issues from multiple perspectives. And I think this program definitely does that. You know, it opens doors for people and has them thinking about the idea of peace, hopefully, in a variety of contexts.
Indeed. When you were a kid in your family, would you describe your family of origin as peaceful, a sort of well-ordered, well-organized
yeah,
family environment?
I was really lucky. I had two amazing parents and three great brothers, and still have two amazing parents and three great brothers. Yeah. And we
remain close as a family?
Yeah, my parents are actually coming into town today, believe it or not.
So they're going to be here for the show?
No, they're coming for Easter. But,
well, that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my brothers and I played baseball in the backyard all the time growing up as kids, and, you know, went golfing as kids. We took those prototypical family vacations with the car top carrier across, you know, out to the national parks in the Midwest or in the Western U.S. And so, yeah, I'm a lucky one.
Embarrassing you about your personal history for this reason. If we are engaged in relationships, even now, this chorus brings a kind of sense of unity and familiarity, a familial sort of connection there, right?
I think the chorus very much, a number of them think of themselves as family, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, you're right. There's so many people that because of their upbringing or past experience have not experienced what this feels like. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the joys of music, you know, and this collaboration between music and powerful texts and all these kinds of things that choral music brings together, because once you add the aural, A-U-R-A-L, aspect of all of this, and as those sounds wash over you in combination with some of these beautiful texts, I do think audience members and performers feel these ideas on a different level than if somebody just, you know, read them the text or something.
Indeed.
And they if for somebody who maybe...
The magic of music.
Who wasn't brought up with that, maybe attending a concert allows them to get an understanding in a way that wouldn't be possible otherwise.
Right. We'll inject them with this.
Yeah.
Well, and not to drive the point too deeply here, but we're dealing with that in our own town. When Leon County, among all the counties in Florida, leads the state in poverty and food deserts.
Mm-hmm.
And the Leon County Sheriff's Department decides, revelation here, boys and girls, poverty is the key contributor to armed violence.
Of course.
Largely in the 04 zip code. And what are we doing about that? What are we doing to engage right here in our backyard, our neighbors, in a dialogue that says, be at peace, come together? Well, it's entirely two different worlds, entirely different languages being spoken. So this isn't all on you.
No, rest and I don't easy. Have all the answers, that's for sure.
Neither do I, certainly. I have more questions than I'll ever have answered.
Yeah.
But I want to, again, congratulate you all and salute the fact that in the face of that, you've endured a lot of, we'll just call it loss, disappointment.
Sure.
You look for other ways that you can contribute, cleaned up a graveyard for slavery graveyard here last year, I guess it was.
Yep, a traditional African-American cemetery.
Yeah,
along the Miccosukee Greenway.
You know, why? And in your answer to that, well, it's because we're here to contribute,
sure,
to give back to this community. We do it musically, and we do it in a lot of ways. That was an example. They keep trying. They keep working. They keep pressing because they believe in what they're doing, and they believe in us. Friends, this is why having Michael Hanawalt here is so important to this broadcast and to us as listeners, because he represents a perspective that we should never, ever ignore, certainly not forget. Michael, we're fortunate to have you, and the TC Chorus is fortunate to have you, and we are fortunate to have you all contributing to our welfare. What lies ahead with the summer coming up? How will that change your life personally?
Oh, doing some traveling this summer. Puerto Rico, Indonesia, London. So pretty busy summer of travel, but should be all hopefully really rewarding and just some wonderful opportunities to make music.
You're not teaching through the summer?
Not the entire summer. I teach the summer master's program in London for 2 weeks and then a couple other opportunities in addition to that. So,
well, at least you know how to pronounce Rafe. when you're among the Brits, you know, try to uphold us in that.
Sure.
Don't embarrass us, okay?
I'll do my best.
Appreciate it. He is Dr. Michael Hanawalt. He is the artistic director for this world-famous Tallahassee Community Chorus that has done so much over the years to bring goodness to this world. I should mention, too, in closing, that the folks over there that are so helping to sponsor this, Leon County Visit Tallahassee, the City of Tallahassee through their Council on Culture and Arts, and, of course, WCTV and Alcom Corporation, all of your sponsors there. And in this concert, there is a cooperative with Big Bend Homeless Coalition. So that's something you folks do as a practice, right? Saddling up with a local charity.
We do always try to partner with somebody in the community, organization in the community that is doing good, and oftentimes it directly relates to kind of the subject matter of the concert and everything like that. So we're really proud and happy to be able to partner with them and hopefully do a small part to help with some of the issues that you were just referencing.
Once again, looking for ways to give back. Take note, friends, that's what you and I need to be doing even today. Look for a way to give back. And do Michael a favor. The poor guy, he's working so hard. Go and buy like 100 tickets, okay? And just go to some of those neighborhoods that you never hang out in and just give them out to the people and encourage them to come and find peace at this particular concert of the year, April 24th, 4 o'clock, Ruby Diamond Concert Hall. Thank you, Doctor.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
It's our pleasure, folks, to bring you this broadcast every week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny is the production of Spatterwork Media and Entertainment, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat Radio, Tallahassee's radio to the world. Carl Cerny is our executive producer, and I'll be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.